Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf. Bava Metzia Ayin Beis. We are holding on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, three lines off the top of the Amud. Tanu Rabbanan, we have learned in Ebrai, so Yisrael, Shalovo, Mois, Mina Nochri Beribis. Suppose a Yisrael borrows money from a Goy with interest. So far, so good. V'zakfan, Olav B'milva. Okay, after a while, they sat down, they took account, they calculated how much interest is meant to be added to the total. Okay, then the total, both numbers together, the principal and the added interest. And Rashi says they drafted a new shtar, a new document stating, look, I owe you this amount, the total amount, which was the combined principal and interest. So it sort of changes the status of that interest. It now becomes like principal. This is what I owe you. Vin is Geir. At this point, the Goy became a Yid. He converted. Oh, so it depends at what point did he convert. Im koidim shen is Geir zukafen olav b'milva. If they total the amount, as we said before, and turns it into a sort of a new loan, going forward, this is what you owe me. And this happened before he converted. So at this point, Rashi explains, at the point of Zakifa, once they sort of added up together and consider this to be the new total, the new amount owing, it's considered kegavo, it's like it's been collected. This is what I owe you. It's as though you already collected the interest and you relent it to me, and I owe you this full amount. We don't reckon with the reasons why. How did I come to this amount? The fact is, it's as though I borrowed this much from you, the total amount. And we ignore the fact that it was meant, part of it was really an interest payment. And that's because this process took place before he became a Yid. Im koidim shen nisgar zukof nol b'milva, he has a right to collect the entire amount. Goibes ha-kerem, goibes ha-ribes, no problem. But v'im la'acha shen nisgar zukof nol b'milva, but if this process took place after he converted, so midra bonon, it looks like the newcomer, the ger, is lending money with interest, and he should not be collecting the interest. Goibes ha-keren, he can collect the principal, the original amount, without the interest. Ve'inoy goive es ha-ribis. The same in the reverse. Ve'chein nochri, shalav ha-mois mi-Yisrael. So we have a goy borrowing from a yid. Be-ribis, with interest, which is fine. And once again, they sort of bundle them both together, the interest with principal, consider it sort of a new loan, a new amount owing. This is, you know, the balance owing. V'zakof and olav b'milva. And again, it was stipulated in a shtar. Okay, v'niz gair. And now, the guy, the borrower, converted. The same story. Im achaloy niz gair zakof and olav b'milva. If they turn the total into a milva before he became a yid. Goyves ha-keren, v'goyves ha-ribis. So now the lender has a right to collect the entire amount. Im mishin is gaira. Zakof and olav b'milva. But if this took place post-conversion, goyves ha-keren, v'einoy goyves ha-ribis. Although min ha-Torah, he's allowed to collect the entire amount because the loan was issued beforehand when he was still a goy. But midrabbanan, it looks like this ribbis being paid from a Yisrael to a Yisrael, so you have to skip the ribbis. But again, if they converted the full amount into sort of a new amount owing, Zakof and Al-Vamilva before, right? Prior to the conversion? I'm sorry, yeah? So in that case, he'll pay him the entire amount. Rabbi Yossi, Aymer. Nachru shalava mois mi Yisrael b'ribis. In this most recent case, Goy borrowed from a Yid. So we said if Zakof and Al-Vamilva, if they relabeled it, the total amount into a milva, after he converted, it's too late. We don't allow the newly converted fellow to pay the ribis. Rabbeisi disagrees. Benkech or Megech, irrespective of when it happened. If they converted it, the play on words, if they relabeled it, they added the principal to the interest and sort of repackaged it as just, you know, a flat amount owing. Doesn't matter when it happened. Benkech or Megech, when it happened before or after. Goyves HaKeren VeGoyves HaRibis. The Yid will collect the entire amount. Why? We'll see in a minute. Amar Rav, Amar Rav Chizda, Amar Rav Huna. Halachak Rav Yosi, that's how we pass. And Amar Rav, my time with Rav Yosi. Why? If they waited until after he converted, then he shouldn't be paying the Ribis. This is meant to avoid any impression. People shouldn't even think. You know why he converted? You know why he became a ger? To save that interest payment. He became a ger to save his money. So, in this situation where the borrower was a guy, he has to pay the ribis regardless. Okay, back to a standard case of a shtar which contains a ribis element, right? Tanu Rabbanan, shtar shekasa bo ribis. So this was, unfortunately, a ribis transaction between two Yisraelim. They drafted a document to that effect. I owe you $1 million plus the ribis. Kainsen oisai, we penalize the malva ve'enoi goy ve'loyes akeren ve'loyes ribis. Divir Rav Meir, according to Rav Meir, forget about using the shtar. We disqualify the entire shtar. You can't use it. For anything. Some Rishonim learned that you can't use it to repossess, to seize properties that the borrower may have sold. So you don't have the potency of a you don't have the power of a shtar, but certainly you still have a monetary claim directly against the borrower. But in any case, the shtar is useless entirely. Chacham Aimer, no, part of it is useless, the forbidden part, but the permissible portion relating to the principal, that's still standing. V'chacham oimim goyves hakeren v'einoi goyves haribis. Mike Mifli, what's the machlekes about? Rameir sava kansinan hetera ato mishum yisura. To avoid any chance of collecting the ribis, we say, skip the whole shtar. For Rabbanan Savri, no, we don't go that far. Loi kansinan hetera ato mishum yisura, we don't penalize and attack the permissible portion on account of the forbidden part. On this topic, we have a mission. Tnan Hosam, Shtari Chayv HaMukdomen. If you have a predated loan document, which is problematic because it empowers the lender to seize any property sold by the borrower starting from the date stipulated in the Shtar, which is erroneous, which is early, which is pre-event. So he's not entitled to seize from that date on, right? Only from the actual, from the moment of the actual loan, right? So shtar chayv hamukdamin pesulin. You can't use these shtar, these documents at all. You can't even use them to collect and to seize properties that were sold starting from the actual date when the loan was actually issued. So this shtar is totally useless. But if it's post-dated, that's okay because, I mean, it's to the lender's detriment. If he's willing to accept such a shtar, fine. Now the question is, why in the first case, mukdaman, am I psulim? Why do we say it's totally disqualified? I mean, neither like govim is manrishin, I understand. He has no right to collect starting from the early date. Nigbum is mansheni, but at least from the time of the actual, you know, when the loan was actually issued. Let him have the ability to use the shtar from then. Amar Shimon Lakish Machlekes Shnuya. You're right, it's actually the Machlekes. Ve'er Rabbi Meir, this is Rameir speaking, who says when it's a problematic shtar, when it's misleading, you just cancel the whole thing. Rabbi Yechon Amar, Afil Tem Rabbanon. You know, even the Rabbanon would agree in this case. It's different than Ribbis. By Ribbis, they said, look, you can't use it to collect Ribbis, but you can use it to collect the actual loan amount. But over here, by a predated document, it's worse. It creates confusion. Who's going to know exactly when the loan was issued and at what point you can start collecting? Zero, there's a concern. Shem Yigbe was Manrishin. He might end up, if we leave the shtar in his hands, we let him collect with the shtar, he might actually take advantage and activate it from the actual date, the erroneous date written in the shtar. How God, there was a story of a fellow, the Mashkin Le Pardis Le Chavri. He borrowed $1 million from Reuven, and he gave him his vineyard as a collateral. Ochlot Lashne. So the lender had it for 3 years, which is considered years of chazaka. Typically, if a person does that, a person buys a field, and after 3 years he's asked to produce the purchase document. He doesn't have to do that anymore. It's been so many years, I discarded it. So here we have a lender in a field, in a vineyard for 3 years running. And now he turns to blackmail. Amarle, he approaches the real owner, the borrower, and he says, look, I'd like to have your field. I'd like to buy from you. Here comes blackmail. Imaz banis l'aneli, if you sell it to me quietly, if my mutter. Great. If you refuse to sell it to me, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pretend that it's mine. Kavishna lo l'shtar mashkanta. I'll hide that document that, you know, stipulates that this is merely a collateral, it's just a mashkin, and it's really yours. I'll hide that. And I'll pretend that it's a purchase. V'amina l'kucha ibiyadi. I'll claim that I purchased the field. Okay, the other fellow was not going to be undone too quickly. Okay, not to be undone, he goes and he pulls a fast one. Ozal come, he quickly gets up, Aknayil ibn Katan. The real owner gives it as a gift in front of two witnesses. He has Eidim. He gives it to his young son so that if he's compelled to sell it to his good friend forcefully, he'll be able to preempt that by coming back and producing evidence that he already gave it away as a matana a day before he allegedly sells it to this blackmailer. So he gave it away as matana on Sunday, and Monday he seemingly consents to sell it to his friend, the Shimon. V'hoda zavne elein, he sells it to the blackmailer. So now, zvini vandilev zvini. Now, it's pretty clear that the sale is null and void. But the question is, Zuzi, the money that he took, I mean, he was paid for the field, right? He certainly has to refund the blackmailer. But what status does this commitment have? I mean, he has to repay it. Kimulva b'shtar domu. So the fact is that this borrower, let's call him Shimon, who sold it to his lender, Reuven, agreed to write a shtar, right? I'm selling it to you, and I'm guaranteeing the sale. If something happens, I'll repay you, right? So, of course, the sale is null and void. He gets back the field. What happened to the money that he was given? How strong is Reuven's claim? Is it like a milva b'shtar damo? Is it like a loan which was stipulated in a document? So when you borrow money and you draft a shtar to that effect, It gives you a right to collect. You can collect from properties that the other fellow may have sold after this event took place. So likewise, in our case, perhaps Reuven has that same power with respect to the money that he handed Shimon on account of this bogus sale. He can go collect from Mishabadim if Shimon can't come up with the money. Or it's like a verbal loan. Without the ability to go and seize lien properties. Because, based on what? The sale document, which was null and void, which was bogus to begin with. So what status does this shtar have? Amar Abaye v'lav hainu d'Rav Asi. Can't we compare this to Rav Asi? Amar Rav Asi, moide b'shtar shekosva yene tzarech l'kaimei. When a loive, when a borrower concedes to the authenticity of a shtar, you don't have to go certified in the Bezdin. This is a standard classical case, right? A lender can just take his word for it and use it to seize properties. Same thing here. The fact is, even though it's not really a sale because it was preempted by that gift which preceded it, but in terms of the money that changed hands, in terms of the money owing to Reuven, it's based on a shtar, which Shimon is fully agreeable to. Amalei Rava. Rava responds, no, how could you compare one to the other? Here it's an illegal transaction. This whole shtar is null and void. It's bogus from day one. Me dummy, how do you compare the two? Hosam, in a standard classical case where the loiva acknowledges its authenticity of a shtar, nitanli kosev, it was meant to be written, meant to be documented. It's a fine shtar. Hacha, but in our case, loi nitanli kosev, this was never meant to be drafted as a document. It's worthless. Yosef Mereima, become a lashmaita. So Mereima was sitting and saying over this rationale presented by Rava, that it's not a proper shtar, and therefore the money owing is merely a milva al peh, which doesn't allow him to collect from nechasim shabbatim. Amale Ravina el Mareima, so Ravina responded to him, Elohada Amar Abyechna. Let's go back to the halach of a shtar chayv hamukdam, a predated loan document. Rabbi Yechna says, the reason why we perhaps don't allow, right? The mission says it's possible we don't allow the malva to collect at all from nechasim shabadim. Elohadam Rabbi Yechna, the reason was gzera shama yigbam is manrishim, because he might come to collect from that early date, which is obviously wrong. So why can't you just give a more simple reason why the shtar is deemed null and void? Namely, should say, why can't he apply your rationale? You gave a good reason. When it's usher to write such a shtar, it's worthless. So why didn't Rabbi Yechman adopt your approach and give that as a reason? Amalei, he said, Hachi Ashta, how do you compare the two? Hasam over there, Nehidah Le'nitin Le'kasev is Manrishan. True. It never should have been dated, you know, early, you know, it never should have been predated. That's true. But the actual event took place. I mean, he lent him money. Avonitin the custom is Mansheni, but it could have been drafted properly based on the proper date. So technically, there was nothing essentially wrong. I mean, it was inaccurate, it was, you know, misleading, but the actual event which the shtar is coming to document took place. Hachal enitin lekasev klal, as opposed to our story, was a plain, simple, bogus blackmail. They never should have even come to writing a shtar about it, so it's totally a non-entity. Asks the Gemara, okay, I have another kasha. Elohad desani, what about a brice that we had back in Daf Yudalit? L'shvach karkois ketzat. Some claims can be collected from nechasim mishubadim, right? If they're, you know, predictable amounts, and you know, you sort of blame the buyer. Why'd you get involved in buying this person's fields and his properties, knowing that you should have realized that he has amounts owing, that he has loans outstanding? But when we're speaking about things which are unpredictable and undefined types of commitments, There, the claimant cannot come and extract and seize properties. I mean, he can collect from the actual party that owes him, but not to go and go to, you know, people who purchase properties. L'shvach ha'koyes ketzad. One example is for improvements in the quality of his of the assets that he's coming to collect for. What does that mean? Ketzad. For instance, like this. Habisha goes al sada mechaver. Shimon steals Reuben's field. U'machar la'acher. Turns around and sells it to Levi. Vishbicha, who invests. He develops it, improves on it. And one fine morning, Reuven, the victim, comes and takes his field back from Levi. So now Levi has a solid claim against Shimon, who sold him that field. It's warranted, right? So Kishugeva, when he comes back to collect, he has two things he wants to get back. He wants to refund it for his sale, amount, for the purchase amount, and also all the improvements that he improved on the field. So it depends. Each one of these claims has to be dealt with separately. The actual principal amount that he can collect in Chasim Shabbatim. Because buyers should have been aware of the fact that Shimon had sold a field for X amount of money. They should have left that amount, you know, available for any future collection. But the improvements, the investments in the field, that's unpredictable, undefined. V'shvach goyvim nechas b'nei chayrin. That he can collect, but only if Shimon has any properties available. Okay, well, the question is, fundamentally, this shtar was an illegally drafted document. I mean, what's Shimon doing selling to Levi a field which never belonged to him, a stolen goods? So the whole thing is bottle. I mean, what right does he have to utilize a shtar, mechira, to collect from a shubad? Name of Leinitin Likasev. Why can't we apply this argument? It's Leinitin Likasev. Hachi Hashta, once again, you can't compare. That shtar, that commitment between Shimon and Levi has some sort of basis. Although it was a stolen field, but Shimon is motivated to substantiate his trust with Levi. I mean, he wants Levi to trust him, right? So this commitment between Shimon and Levi has some basis to it. Hachi hashta hasam ilaman de Omar. We have these reasons back in the Fidalad. There's one opinion which says that it has some sort of legal validity. Because nichale de le nikrei gazlano. Because the fact is Shimon, after selling this field to Levi, will endeavor to approach the actual owner, Reuven, and buy it off him so that Levi doesn't turn around and call Shimon a robber. Or according to the other opinion, Nichaleid Leikam Memnuse, Shimon would make all effort to sustain his trust with Levi. So on account of these reasons, he's motivated to try to really do good on his commitment to Levi. So it has validity. There's something to it. Mephaisle, Lamar, he'll try to appease the owner, pay him off for the field, umukim le l'shtare, and shore up this shtar and the sale to Levi. So it has some sort of, it carries water, it's something to it. Hacha, but in our story, where the fellow blackmailed him to sell him the field, and he turned around and gave it to his son. I mean, the whole thing was a non-starter. I mean, you see that the fellow was trying to get it away from this fellow. Is there any reason to think that I'll try to be machzik the shtar, substantiate the shtar, shore up the shtar, support this so-called sale to Levi, to his blackmailer? Of course not. It has no validity. Doesn't hold any water, and it's worthless. Continues the Mishnah. In Poiskin ala Peris, say we're going to speak about investing in futures, contracting for certain commodities to be delivered throughout the season. Okay? Now today it's pretty cheap, it's pre-season. And eventually it might go up in price. Can I do that? Can I pay you for the goods now and receive its delivery later when the price goes up? Or do we say it's considered rivers? Because ultimately I'm getting more than what I paid for. Perhaps it's called rivers because it's considered like a fee that I'm charging, that you're paying me on account of the money that you're holding from me. On account of like a bar, it's like borrowing money from me. Or do we say, no, it's considered a perfect purchase? So it all depends on whether this merchandise has a going rate, has an established market value. At that point we say, you can purchase it, and it's considered a purchase. And you can only be paisik contract on produce, achiyete ashar, you can only do that when the shar, the market rate, has been established. It's a commodity up for sale, it's given to be purchased, and therefore it's mutar. Yatza ashar, once the shar is out, paisken, you can do this. You know what? Even if you don't have any commodity in stock, yesh lezeh, your competitor has it. So when I pay you, you can take that money and buy it down the block. So it's considered within hand's reach, it's accessible, it's considered a purchasable item, and it's mine now. So even though it may increase in price, it's my goods to play with. Suppose we're not yet at the point of yatza hashar. Season has not yet started, the price hasn't yet been established, but you're an early bird. You're harvesting a field before everybody else. So here, as long as you have that merchandise to sell, I can contract with you. Because I'm sort of buying those goods. Again, it's considered a proper purchase. Poisek imayel agadish. He can do this psika, this agreement, this contract on his pile of grain, ala abachal anavim, his basket full of grapes, al matan shal zaysim, his store of olives, right, sitting in this pile or whatever. Basically, if he has it in a stock, you can buy it from him. Vala beitzim shal yoitzer, this is a pot maker, a dish maker, so he has these beitzim, these balls of unfinished pottery. Vala sid, and you can buy lime, mishashaka bekivshan, once he inserted the ingredients into the furnace. So basically, if it's there, it's available, you can buy it. What about fertilizer? Animal waste. You can do that. You can contract on that. Throughout the year, even though he doesn't have it in stock. Because, and even though it doesn't have, let's say it doesn't have a set market value at this point, you can do it kolim hashashana throughout the year because it's so available. It's always accessible and therefore it's purchasable. Rabbi Yosi Omer, no, ain't paisken la zevel, elam kin hoist le zevel v'ashpa. Zevel is like the other things. If he has it, fine. If he has the zevel sitting in his ashpa, in his dump, whatever, then he can sell it to you. Otherwise, v'chamatirim, they say no. Even if he doesn't have it available, it's okay. Because it's accessible. Upaisek imay b'shara gavoya. Here comes an interesting point. Let's say I contract with you for wheat, but eventually it drops in value. It also happens sometimes, right? So I can stipulate with you, look, I'm expecting the best of both worlds. If it goes up, then you'll give me based on the higher value. If it goes down in price, I want you to give me based on today's rate. If today it's 5 pounds a dollar, so even if it goes down to 3 pounds per dollar, I want you to give me 5 pounds per dollar. Yochalemel, you can tell him, look, tainly kazeh. Either provide for me based on the lower rate, or tainly is my sign, or return my money. Okay, so basically, he invested with him, he never took delivery, and then the price dropped. You can get more for your money. So you can insist on getting more for his money, otherwise, refund me my money. And The Rashi explains, what about Misha Parah, right? You're not meant to back off on a commitment. The answer is, since he initially invested with him for future delivery, the assumption is, the running assumption is that he wants the best deal. Omar Ba'asi, Omar Bi'ichnan, Ein Poiskin Al Shasha B'Shuk. In contrast to our Mishnah, which began with an opening statement that you can be Poiskin Al Shasha B'Shuk, you can't do that. If it has a market value, it has a going price, you can purchase it, it's my goods to play with. Even if it goes up in price later, it's mine. There's no rubis issue. According to Rabbi Yechanan, seemingly you can't do that. Amalei Rab Zeril Rav Asi. Let me try to understand. You're quoting Rabbi Yechanan. What do you mean? Amar Rabbi Yechanan say, Afilu Kedurmas Hazeh, even if the Durmas Rashi says is a huge marketplace, grain is being sold by the millions. There's a going rate, there's a going price. You can't contract at this point. I mean, it's a purchasable item. Amar Lei, no. Of course, once you get to that point, the market develops to that point, it's so late in the season, of course, you could. Rabbi Yechanan was only concerned Ela B'Shuk Shel HaYoreis, regarding the small, small city marketplaces, like Kvitar Ayu, where, the rates aren't really established yet. It's still sort of preliminary. It's preliminary preseason rates. So at that point, since it's not kavua, it's a fluctuating type of thing, it's not predictable. So, the whole point was that I can contract it to you because you can buy it elsewhere, but it's fluctuating, it's an unpredictable situation, and therefore, it's not really considered a full, proper purchase. Says the Gemara, L'man salaka daita mikar. Now, according to our initial thinking, the way we understood Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yechanan, afilu kedurmas hazeh, that even if it's a really well-established market rate, you can't proceed with this contract. But what happened to our Mishnah? You can't do it before the Ishar. Yotza Ashar, once the Ishar is fully established, Paiskin, you could do this, Psika. So, the way we understood Rabbi Yechanan, that you can't, so how does it work with the Mishnah? Heichem Mishkachas Lo. So, how we went to understand the Heter of the Mishnah? Right? If even the most, prevalent shahr is not enough, most established rate is not considered. So, says the Gemara, Masnissen Bechiti Dachalbe. If that was the true understanding of Rabbi Yechanan, we could have explained the Mishnah to be speaking where we're very, very advanced into the season. Bechiti Dachalbe Va'arbe. Achalbi are the warehouses. The warehouses have been opened wide. Supply is gushing into town. Va'arbi, the ships have arrived. At that point, the mashuch tarei tfei, that rate stays for a while. That's considered really an established, permanent type of arrangement, in which case we say there's no concern of fluctuations, and it makes sense that you can proceed with this contract, even though you'll get delivery later, because the way it's going, this is the rate. But when it comes to any other type of rate, which hasn't yet been established on a permanent basis, there's some concern about an element of fluctuation, and perhaps in that case it's unfair to hold them accountable, to hold them fully committed to today's rate. Tanu Rabban. Okay, back to the basic halacha in Paiskan ala Peris. You cannot contract on future delivery of grains, achiyetze ashar, unless the ishar has been established. Yetze ashar, once that happens, poiskin can do that. Even if this particular merchant doesn't have it in stock, but his competitor does. So let him take my money and buy it elsewhere. It's accessible to him. It's considered a proper transaction. Now, hayu chadosh es ma'arba v'yishon es mishalish. Suppose the fresh wheat, chadashes, were going at a cheaper rate than the yishanes, the older ones, which are drier and easily, you know, easier to grind. So the new ones are going me'arba, 4 pounds for a dollar. The older ones, mishalish, three pounds per dollar, more expensive. Ein poiskin, ashayeti ashar, l'chadash v'liyashim. So I can't go ahead and make a psika. Again, psika means to commit myself in a contract for future delivery. I can't do it on the chadash, on the fresh wheat, which are going now for $4 a pound cheaper, with the intention to take delivery later. Because later on, once it dries up, right, I'm going to get it half a year later, it's going to be a shanitz. At that point, I'm getting more than I paid for. Look, I'm asking you for today's rate on the chadashes, but I know good and well I'm going to take it from you in a half a year's time. At that point, it's considered yeshanes, and it's worth more. So I'm in effect asking to get more than I'm paying for. You can't do that. Achiyeta ashar lechadash liyashan, until it's only allowed if this same shar, this equal rate, four per dollar, applies to both the chadash and yashan, in which case it's a fair proposition. Four for a dollar. And whatever you give me later, even if you give me a dried wheat, it's the same price. So that's what I contracted you with for. In similar fashion, suppose the material brought to the market by the lukutes, by the poor, you know, poor people who collect their stalks of, you know, leket, shikcha, peya, the portion of the poor people sitting in the fields. So they sort of collect from assorted farms, and they put it together, and they sell it at the market, which is not such high quality because it's like, you know, an assortment of random, from random sources, right? So that goes for arba, four for a dollar. Uchlada mishalish, whereas, you know, your standard typical, farm wheat is going for three per dollar, more expensive. Ain place can achieve ashar leket v'lemeicher. So here as well, I can't go ahead and contract with a regular farmer based on the likutei rate, which is cheaper, unless the price equalizes. Achayit ashar, the same rate applies equally leloiket v'lemeicher to this or that, to the the collected ones and the properly sourced ones. Okay, otherwise I'm asking for more than I'm paying. Amar Rav Nachman, placing lakutes, kishar lakutes, right. I mean, I could contract with a poor man to take delivery of his material based on that price, right? That's fine. Right? Amar Rav Nachman, maishna loikit. Why are you allowing this by the poor man? Because even if he doesn't have it in stock, Yosef Milokit Chavrei, he can just go and borrow it from his fellow poor man who has the same type of material, right? So Balabai is Nami Yosef Milokit. So why can't I do the same thing with a regular Balabai? Look, I'd like to purchase, you know, the cheaper material. If you don't have it, you can go obtain it from a poor man. Amali Balabai Zil Bemilsa Lameza. It's unlikely that he. Typical farmer will borrow. It's degrading for him to go to a poor man and get this material. Ultimately, he's going to really give you good stock, which is unfair, right? Another reason is that when a person pays to a farmer, to a balabayis, he's expecting high quality material. And not, low grade, assorted random material. A peri shapiri, on good quality material, he's providing that money. So ultimately, he's expecting better qualities. You have no right to give him the low rate. Otherwise, you're running into all kinds of issues of ribis. Amar of sheshes, amar of chumna. Ein loivin al shasha b'shuk. Up until now, we allowed you to purchase material for future delivery, according to today's rate. But Suppose a person wants to borrow money today, and he commits to return, to repay with grain based on today's low rate, although he's returning it half a year later, where it's already more expensive. You can't do that, because basically he's giving the lender a benefit. He's giving him more material than he borrowed. Rav Huna doesn't allow this. Wasn't there a question asked from Rav Huna? Bo minim Rav Huna, hani b'nei b'rav. These yeshiva students, the yasvi b'tishrei, they borrow money tishrei time, when the price of produce is cheap, still pre-season. Upari b'tevis, and they repay with produce during the month of Tevis, when it's worth more. And during Tishrei, they committed to 10 pounds of wheat, which reflected, whose value reflected the amount that they borrowed. That's fine. But they actually repaid that same 10 pounds Tevis when it was worth double the price. Is that allowed or not? Shari Ayasar. Permitted or not? Amalahu, he says, sure, it's fine. You know why? Look, during Tishrei, when the fellow borrowed the money, the money was available, but the chitim were available in the town of Hini, the town of Shili. He can take that money and buy with it grain right on the moment and use it to repay his loan. He chose not to do that, to hold on to the money and only buy the wheat later. That's his prerogative. If they would have chosen to zavni, they would have purchased the wheat right then and there, apparently and repaid it. So basically, it's their prerogative to hold on to the money and then later on have to buy it at a higher rate. So here, he seemed to be okay with this. And then he said it's no good. Yeah, mikara savar afuna ein leivin. It says the Gemara, initially, he thought it wasn't acceptable. You can't do this, because it's a ribbis issue. Given the sham, al-hadam, rashon, rachia, and rablaza. But once you heard rashon, rachia, quoting rablaza, that it's okay, leivin, you can do this arrangement, amar, you, nami, leivin, he as well conceded that it's okay, and we deem it a non-ribbis arrangement. So basically, just like you can offer money as a purchase for a certain commodity based on today's rate, despite the fact you're only getting it later, because you can take that money, and even if you don't have it in stock, you can use my money to buy that product today if you wish to do so. So it's a proper purchase. You're committing to that delivery, so it's a purchasable item. It's considered a transaction. It's a purchase. Likewise, if I borrow your money, right? I can theoretically take that money and use it to buy grain today. I chose not to. Rather, I chose to spend the money and buy you grain later. That's my prerogative. Okay, so in summation, we started with two halachas pertaining to a yid having a loan interaction with a goy, a ribbis interaction, and there was a conversion that took place, a gior in some cases. He can collect the entire amount, some cases not. What about a shtad that has ribbis in a forbidden manner? Rameir says it's totally disqualified. Rabbanan say you can use it as the shtar for the keren. That tied us into the question of a predated shtar. Then the story about the fellow who was blackmailed, and he preempted his blackmailer by giving it away to his son. Mer comes out that the shtar has no value. And we had this interesting sugi called Psika al Shar Shabashuk. You're purchasing now based on a futures contract. It would be okay if, in fact, the Shar has been established and is considered a proper purchase. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.